Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Jay Noon.
And Riley.
We have Charles in New Hampshire. Charles, what's on your mind?
Well, basically, I'm calling in to talk about the Sununu Youth Center lawsuit, YDC lawsuit. That's one of my good friends, David Meehan, is going to trial for. And I'm John Doe number 9 in that lawsuit. And, you know, just being there changed the trajectory of my life.
And let me clarify for the listeners, the Sununu Detention Center is Chris Sununu Youth Detention Center, and it's a place in New Hampshire where they would keep, was it only boys or boys and girls?
It was boys and girls.
Yeah, so yes. It's like a juvenile detention center, basically, in New Hampshire. I think it's still run, but there have been tons, like, I believe thousands of people that have come out and said that they were sexually abused there or even just beaten and stuff like that. So, and you say that you were there as a young person?
Yeah, I was there from 1992 to 1997. Hmm. Before that, I was in the YDSU.
How old were you at the time?
I was 11. 11 okay. to 15 years old.
Okay.
And yeah, it was tough. You know, I was subjected to physical and sexual abuse, broken bones.
Oh my God.
You know, at some point, you know, I tried to take my own life. I think I was 14 or 15 just to try to get out of the year or so that I'd been in solitary confinement. They were locking us. They'd lock us in solitary confinement with nothing but our underwear and a blanket. And if we talked, they'd come and beat us up. They'd open our windows up from the outside. So all the cold air would go inside there. You'd just be in there freezing. And they didn't want us to talk. It was kind of the norm for them to beat children or do things to emasculate them. The system knew what was happening. Every employee there knew that it was an abusive environment. It was systemic. The Attorney General's office knew. In fact, it was in the union leader throughout the 90s and the 2000s. State reps brought the abuse to the public, the Attorney General's office, into the Attorney General's office. I just want to cite a couple of the dates that we got out of the union leader archives. On August 14, 2019, Michael Conley and Jane Young, they cite that there's going to be a comprehensive investigation of YDC. The union leader on November 21, 2000, a state rep cites 15 to 20 new complaints of abuse. On April 20, 2001, Ann Larney, which I believe worked for the Attorney General's office, cites abuse. On April 8, 2001, State Rep Patricia Dowling and Donald Shemingway, I think he was also a state rep, cites that the abuse investigation results will be in 30 days. I remember there was another December 17, 2001, Gene Shaheen is cited in an article where they're talking about the issues at YDC. And on December 17th, Phil McLaughlin, I think of that same year, 2000, cites that YDC is under investigation for child abuse.
And why would it take over a decade? Why would it take so long if they were investigating and years are going by?
Well, this is the weird thing. In 2002, the Disability Rights Center, to 2010, they did a comprehensive investigation of YDC, and they cited systemic abuse. Kelly Ayotte was the Attorney General at that time. Kelly Ayotte's looking for support right now as to be the New Hampshire governor.
Yeah.
She took no action the entire time.
Whoa.
You know, if people are watching the Dave Meehan trial, it's on WMUR. It's been on for the last week or two. Wayne Eigerbrot and Virgil Bossom, one worked for the State Police and Trainings Council. The other one worked for the Internal Affairs Department. They said that they referred multiple cases for criminal prosecution. Another lady, Rochelle Edmark, testified that when she worked for the Internal Affairs Department, she wrote over 150 abuse complaints and that an investigator and all the reports are missing. You know, so it's weird that the AG's office and the state police, although they're citing these throughout the years, investigation, nothing ever transpired. Now, everything that I've told you about abuse, I can swear that under the pains and penalties of law.
Sherman Packard is part of this conspiracy to cover up the crimes of DCYF. I am sure if you start looking at the dollars somewhere, somehow, I don't know if either, you know, it's his donors or his friends or him personally or family members or, you know, the guy's just a statist cult member parasite, you know, and, you know, whatever. And he wants to see the state thrive and all these pension funds, you know, be nice and propped up. So all the people on the judicial pension fund and the executive pension fund, you know, have these fat, happy, golden parachute pensions that are, you know, essentially, you know, being propped up by the, you know, guns being directly pointed at taxpayers to support these. And also now we know that the direct torture of children, the stealing of children, the violation of due process laws, the violation of you know, constitutional rights, the violation of a right to a jury trial. I mean, all of these elements that you that is being talked about with all this stuff with DCYF, we can find them all in the grievances of the founding fathers and why they had to have a revolutionary war with you know, a tyrannical government, you know, 200 some odd years ago. And so this union is almost 250 years old, and it's ready to collapse because they governments don't really last that long throughout history. And I'm hopeful for a collapse because these parasites, they have just so much power, frankly, because they can just keep on printing money out of thin air. But yeah, they are hell-bent on making sure that there is no testimony under oath. It is so important that people, when people utter these words about what happened to them, they say, you know, I do solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me, Great Spirit or God or universe or whatever you want to say. And because that is sworn testimony that can actually be used to do something. And so it's continuing right now. There is a cover up happening, you know, soft cover up happening right now with a current. And they're supposed to have a meeting, I believe, on the 1st. And I don't know the exact schedule for this committee to investigate DCYF. And since they got the Erica Layton is her name. And since she got in there, was appointed chair. And I don't know if she's just, you know, there to romance the stone and make everything look good or if she actually really cares. But I don't know what the deal is with her. I just don't really have an opinion. But there's still, as of, I haven't gotten an email. I'm looking through my email right now. And they're like, you know, they're supposed to email me. I gave her my email. When are you going to have the next hearing? Because mm-hmm. at these hearings, I only want to hear 10 minutes. Well, I got a lot of bad actors to tell this committee about. You know, 5 social workers, 2 lawyers, for example, and you know, I need, you know, at least 7 or 8 more hearings to get through all the stuff I just got to tell them at 10 minutes at a whack, you know, under oath. And they haven't had another hearing, and I think they're trying to push it so there's no more hearings, and you know, and then the session's done and it's all over.
Weird.
Who knows? That's, so that's there needs to be a hearing date. In fact, I'm going to text Erica, the committee chair, about that again.
Well, I've never heard of that. It is an election year, so maybe they're trying to push things off to make it seem like they're pushing under the rug to hide things so that they don't have to deal with it until the next administration comes in, and they're like, oh, we
that
don't.
That sounds know. Like that could be like the case, but that's, that. I'm surprised that that's even a tactic they can do. But so I just think, let's put this in perspective of, you know, this is happening all over the country. People are getting their kids taken away for, maybe they are bad parents, but they're taken and given to the state, which is almost never a better situation for children than being with their own parents. And even if it's better than being with their own parents, the government is then abusing them and getting paid to do it. The government of each state gets paid from the feds to literally traffic children. That's exactly what this is taking kids from their parents and giving them to other people at a profit. That's trafficking. And at the age of the age that Charles was in this detention center, I feel like he should have been able at some point to just emancipate himself and go, you know, live, you know, doing small jobs or something, like live on a farm and work for his living or something. And like anyone would be better off doing that. It's just crazy to act like people who are 15 years old don't have the same rights that an 18-year-old does. It's so silly. I just think that if you're not able to live with your parents are truly unable to take care of you, and you don't have any family you can go to, and you're old enough to choose to make other decisions, you should be allowed to do that. But the government keeps people from doing that, has people in these detention centers all over the country, these juvenile detention centers, usually what I hear them called. And who is stopping them from being abused? Are you guys suing the officers themselves, or who's actually the defendant?
We're suing the officers. Some of the officers, I'm suing Jeff Buskey, Tommy Searles, Richard Brown. There's a slew of other guys, Stephen Murphy, Lamont Hicks. There's about over 1,400 ex-residents of the Sununu Youth Detention Center that are suing DHHS, DCYF, the state of New Hampshire for systemic abuse. Now, the state is attempting to cover this up, and we know that because New Hampshire is a mandatory reporting state. And if anyone watched Dave's trial, the ex-attorney affairs officer and another officer just testified that they referred complaints to the state police. Well, they won't release any of the state police reports. Where are all these reports from the 90s? Who didn't do their job in the attorney general's office? But even bigger than that, we attempted to get my records from a doctor, William Windler. He was one of two doctors that worked at YDC from like 1990 to the 2000s. And they've destroyed all of the medical records. You know, broken bones, girls pregnant, kids that got STDs while they were there, destroyed all of the records. There is no medical records. There's still nurse reports, and this is where they've messed up, because some of the nurse reports explain broken bones. There's also log reports where they log out vehicles to transport kids to the hospital and the medical facilities, and on some of those reports, they've actually placed what the injury is. So they've destroyed the medical records. They either won't give, they're suppressing, or they've destroyed the state police reports from back then. And even right now, during trial, Brandon Chase is the assistant attorney general. And here he is trying to gaslight my good friend, David Meehan. And he's trying to say, you had mental illness. You were a wild kid while he's on the stand. Wow. But yet, the other half of the attorney general's office has used what Dave has told them to indict. That's why not once during this trial have they said, Dave, you're lying. Dave, we're impeaching you. Instead, they're trying to gaslight him and make him look like he's vicious. This same guy, Brandon Chase, okay, he's actually right now representing, he's representing the ex-top child sex crimes detective, James McLaughlin, and trying to hide the misconduct in that case called John Doe versus the city of Keene. So this is our attorney generals. They're fighting not to open up the Lori list, not to expose, you know, malfeasance and corruption. You know, it's obvious now, not just through that, but Chuck Douglas, who was the head of the judiciary, was the chief justice at one point, was the first one that really let New Hampshire know. I think it's in Jane Doe versus New Hampshire, State versus Jane Doe, where he actually allows for delinquent kids and foster kids, at-risk kids, to all be mixed together. And New Hampshire does this because the towns, the cities, in the school departments, we're all pointing the figure at who's going to pay for these delinquent children, who's going to pay for these special needs children, these at-risk children. And that's the first showing in 1981 where he groups them all together because he knows he can tap in to the Social Security Act. Fast forward four decades, he's now representing kids in the YDC Sununu Youth Center lawsuit saying, hey, come over here, I'll represent you. We'll go get you part of that settlement fund. We'll tap into the settlement fund. We'll get you paid. They don't really, the same people that were in charge of hiding this, suppressing this misconduct, are the same people now that are tapping into trying to hide it now. And it's sad. It's sad because they're out there, you know, they're wolves in sheep clothing trying to act as if they're there to help us. You know, if it wasn't for, you know, our grassroots people that are out there that are raising the stink, they're out there, you know, trying to push petitions. Obviously, Leah, we need to get her back in her position. I don't know if you guys know Therese Bastarash, Therese the nurse. I know she's running for executive council next year. She would be great just because she loves children. This is a nonpartisan thing. So when you ask the attorneys, how come it seems so non-adversarial, you know, you're not really challenging. You're not filing that these prosecutors that are violating the ethical obligation or the Supreme Court rules. And they'll tell you, we handle things on a collegiate level. We're not very adversarial because we handle things on a collegiate level. That's what they say. It's disgusting, you know?
Yeah, like they're like laughing with the prosecution right before the trial starts. They're like, hey, Georgie, oh, you look good today. How are you doing? How are the kids? And like, and you're like, what is going on? That's my lawyer laughing with the prosecution.
Yeah, your lawyer is an enemy spy. Just remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
So I'll, I run a little Facebook page. It's ran through Ashley George. It's at, Real Just Us, so R-E-A-L space J-U-S-T-U-S, like Just Us, at facebook.com, and we go out and we rally to let the public know that the government is complicit for decades of abuse of children, and to show them how we'll be rallying again within the next month and a half, and I know that some of the We the People will be out there, and couple people from the ACLU, which they kind of, as many people as possible. We need as many people as possible. It's nonpartisan. It's just the page is comprised of almost all YDC victims or victims that were in state care, and we know what's going on. We know exactly what's going on, but a lot of times the public don't. And until the public does, and people are willing to maybe go out there and do some voter engagement, we're not going to win this battle. So we'll be out there within the next month or so. That's pretty much all I got. I want to thank you guys for letting me come on your show.
Thank you so much for your call. Hopefully people will go check out Real Just Us at facebook.com. And thank you for everything that you're doing out there. I think it's always good when people are pointing out what happened to, you know, personally happened to them, like Charles, and also just what's going on, what the state is doing, because a lot of people just, since it's behind, out of sight, out of mind, they just don't know about it. And they, the more people talking about this kind of stuff, I do think it's important. I don't know all these details, or I'm not like very familiar with the case. A lot of times it's just like, I know so much bad stuff about that the government's doing that it just feels like just filling my brain with junk to like go learn about every single like cop abuse and every single, you know, dirty detail with this youth detention center. But I still really appreciate people calling in and telling their stories, because
it's like, definitely depressing that we live in a world where government corruption is the norm and people aren't surprised by it. But we should be living in a world where people are extremely surprised and extremely shocked by government corruption, shocked enough that they can remove these punks from office.
Yeah, I wish people, were a bit more shocked about it. Well, one case about like rape that was very interesting to people was Harvey Weinstein's case, Weinstein's case. And I find it kind of interesting that people care more about, you know, Hollywood celebrities getting raped.
The Hollywood celebrities are more noticeable. They're more upfront. They're the I guess they're the, I don't know how to put it, but they're the people that are going to get the most views or the most likes, the most clout on the internet or the world in general, because they're in the movies, they're doing all these things, and people want to be like them for whatever reason. I don't understand it. Maybe that's just me. But it's just strange that Hollywood sets the tone for society.
It kind of does. A lot of people say that life imitates art, and yeah. I see it all the time. Like when I was a third grader, that was the first year I was in public school, which I was 9 and like everybody else was 8 because my mom had me redo third grade. She was like, oh, I'm afraid I didn't do well, but then I did very well. Like it was easy to me. We have Rob from Vermont. Rob, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I want to commend that last caller that called in and the work that they're doing. This is fantastic. And you know, I was out myself last night over at the Claremont City Hall, where the council over there removed Representative John Stone from the panel. And it was a 5-3 decision vote. And there must have been, I don't know, 50, 60 people in there that couldn't get everybody all in the room. It was packed. And the people are upset about all of this. And now that he's out of that role, the next role is to get him out of his seat up in Concord, New Hampshire.
So you said they removed him from the panel. What panel did they remove him from?
He was, the vote was a 5-3 for removing Stone from the Claremont Development Authority and the Policy Committee.
Okay.
And it was effective immediately.
Wow.
And I've just put together a letter that I'm sending off, or that I sent off to the Speaker of the House about this individual. Not sure if I'll get a response back or anything, but this is what we need to do. We need to keep on the pressure with this. Some of the other things that could be done is, you know, people start bringing flyers. And when you go to the city halls or when you go out there to protest, bring flyers with you and share this with the public. And then encourage the public to share this with their friends and family. Because it doesn't seem that we're getting enough press on this. You know, the press has kind of been silent about a lot of things. Like, for instance, Detective James F. McGoffin, who now works at the county attorney's office in Keene, New Hampshire, part-time as an investigator. That's so wrong. If look this gentleman up on Google in New Hampshire, and you'll see exactly what I'm referring to.
What's his name?
James F. McLaughlin.
Yeah, like I said, people fail up in the government, so if you're a terrible creep harming people and you're a cop, you're probably going to just like get moved on and up the rest of your career until you're, you know, in charge of things that a creepy, terrible abuser shouldn't be in charge of.
Exactly. And my feeling is that all those individuals, those John Does and Jane Does that are trying to get away from all of this, that are collecting pensions that the hardworking people of the state of New Hampshire are paying, take and put a stop on those pensions until their issues are resolved. They should not be being paid.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I don't think there should be pensions for any of these government employees whatsoever. I mean, it's all a scam anyways, the whole pension system. It's all, you know, getting ready to collapse, best I can tell. And, you know, the people today aren't going to see, you know, the people working, you know, right now in their 20s or 30s and their 40s aren't going to see any pension money like what people are getting for pensions right now. Like, for example, I know of someone who worked for the education system in the state, and their salary, because they have a doctorate and they didn't teach, they weren't a teacher, they were an administrator. Their salary was like $120,000 a year, And now they collect like $84,000 a year in pension. And they weren't a school teacher. They were an administrator. And this is what your school taxes go to pay. And for I think for like every one teacher that's being paid right now, there's like four or five that you're paying a pension for. And they say that 80% of your property tax goes towards basically the school budget. And 80% of that school budget goes to service the pensions. And the other thing is the pensions are all serviced first. And I like the idea that in Florida, like, for example, there is no pension for teachers.
You're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Well, I called under another question, but listening to the last caller, I believe I can answer some of those questions. The question came up about why these public employees, specifically teachers and education administrators, command these retirement programs, and they are rather generous, I have to admit. Now, specifically in California, they have what's known as a defined benefit rather than a defined contribution. Now, the difference between the two is that the employee is guaranteed a certain amount of money upon retirement. Defined contribution is that the employee gets whatever has been accumulated, and that number will not be determined until he's at retirement age. So that's the difference in those two programs. Now, what happens is that you've got notoriously low wages being paid to these education employees, and to compensate, it's much easier for the school district to administer a retirement plan when you have 50% contribution into it than it is to pay a salary with, you know, medical and so on and so on. So that's why we are
teachers are the only ones that anyone brings up when I point out that no government employee is underpaid. Honestly, I still don't think that teachers are underpaid, but everyone will claim that. But it doesn't matter. The point is that those are the only ones anybody can bring up. No other government employee is underpaid.
Well, that's a matter of opinion, with all due respect. And apparently in the job market, in order to retain quality teachers and have the consistency in instruction within the school district, they have to do
something.
Okay,
but what I'm saying is it doesn't explain why every other government employee has pension funds that are so generous. That's what I'm saying. It's like,
not only do teachers have this generous pension fund, but
right,
the teacher's pension fund is the most expensive for the taxpayers.
Hmm. And it's right. It's just
right
a known fact that people, when they're applying for a government job, they're like, get you a government job. They pay well. It's not like it's not like I'm just saying like that out of nowhere. I used to live on Dugway Proving Ground, mostly civilian government jobs, government workers. Everybody talks about this like, oh, you could do that in the public sector, but you'll make way more money if you do the same thing as a government employee.
That's true. I can't argue that point. My only perspective is, you know, from direct knowledge, is with the Teachers Retirement Association in California. So I just put that forward for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I called in was about the governor of Arizona, Katie Hobbs, who recently made news by vetoing the legislation that was going to ban squatters in homes, basically. And she now is on record as having the greatest number of vetoes of legislation within any state, certainly within Arizona, in all time. And the question that's never answered and also is never asked is, well, how many of those vetoes have been overridden by the Arizona legislature? And I cannot find the answer to that question anywhere. I just wanted to, you know, see if you guys knew where some of that information can be obtained.
Unfortunately, no. I don't.
Were you for or against this bill that she vetoed?
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just asking, were you for or against this new bill that she vetoed about the squatters?
She's against it. The legislature had put forward legislation that outlawed squatting in single-family homes.
Right.
Just basically gave the homeowner permission to call the sheriff and summarily evict those people. I mean, at the moment, there's no waiting. There's no legal paperwork. The sheriff comes and evicts them. She vetoed that legislation.
Yeah, and the question Bonnie had for you was if you were for or against that particular legislation.
Oh, I'm for that legislation.
Right, that sounds like
agree.
Good legislation.
I would
so,
agree.
Are you
I don't think anybody's against it but Katie Hobbs.
Well, Katie Hobbs is, you know, she's very much affiliated with the Mexican drug cartels. There's a big deal in, are you in Arizona?
I live in Texas, actually.
Okay, well, there's a guy, his show is on the LRN.FM network. A few days a week. His name's Ernest Hancock. Have you heard of his show, Declare Your Independence?
Don't think I have.
Okay.
But I can definitely look it up.
So go to his website, Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, and top right, click on archives, and there, or you can even search his website for Arizona Secretary of State's Office cartel land. Something or another, but anyways, the so Katie Hobbs was the Secretary of State, I believe, before she was governor, if I got that correct.
Correct.
And was yes. and so some woman who's like an insurance actuary came into the Arizona legislature to testify, and basically provided these guys with like a 300 and something page brief. Every legislator, you know, every whatever representative got one, and she starts going through her thing about how the drug cartels are basically laundering their money through the Secretary of State's office of New Hampshire via buying a whole bunch of single-family homes. Because all through Arizona, you got these developments, tons of finished single-family homes, and nobody's living in them.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
Peter, where are you calling us from? Peter, I forgot to ask.
Hi, yes, I'm calling in from Virginia, and I'm actually driving back home, so sorry if you guys hear a car. But the topic I wanted to talk about, sorry about that. So the topic I wanted to talk about was stagflation, and, you know, I'm sure you all know, and your audience knows, we've been in some sort of stagflation, I would argue, since...
So what does that exactly mean for the listeners who don't know? Stagflation, are you saying inflation, but what do you mean by what's the beginning part mean?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I should have elaborated. So stagflation basically is the phenomenon where we have low GDP, so low output, low economic output, low production, and we have high inflation. Namely, high consumer prices. And, you know, this is, I would argue, this has been here since, I would say, since COVID started, since the lockdowns and the whole PPP shenanigans and, you know, the COVID relief package that Trump signed off. And, you know, what this basically did was just bid up prices. Unfortunately, you know, we don't have a manufacturing base in this nation. And so, you know, when you give people free money, and, you know, they love to buy things with that money. What happens is you have an increase in the trade deficit. But, you know, all this to say you had, right, at that time, more money chasing few goods. And so it just takes time for these things to show up in data. And, you know, government can try to, you know, release and publish their own metrics they use. And, you know, they try to underweigh the true rate of inflation. That's why they like to cite and they like to point to core inflation. Now, core inflation basically is convenient because it takes away two sectors that people like me and you spend most of our money on, and that's, you know, energy and I believe it's I'm blanking out. I think it's energy and food?
I think it's food, yeah.
Yeah, but we were talking about that yesterday. Yeah. It's food and energy, which is weird that they leave that out.
Exactly, and it's convenient because, you know, it's just going to, what it does is it understates the true rate of inflation for the given month, or it understates the change of inflation from month to month or year to year, and that's why they love to use it. But, you know, what happened today was the latest number came out, and it was hotter than expected. And so, you know, inflation is starting to show up even in government's own, you know, predetermined metrics that it uses. And, you know, GDP, I would argue, is a complete fallacy the way it's calculated, because, you know, one parameter that's used to calculate GDP is government expenditures. And, you know, I believe we're spending every 3 months about $1.6 trillion. And so, well, you know, the latest figure that came out today, GDP was 1.6%. So you're telling me it takes $1.6 trillion of government expenditures, right, of spending on nonsense to come up with a GDP of 1.6%. You know, take that away, we're looking at, you know, possibly negative GDP. And so all this to say, we have low output, we have low production, and we have high prices. This is simply stagflation. And, you know, the last time this happened in this nation was throughout the 1970s. And how did we get out of this? Well, it took courage. It took someone called Paul Volcker to come into the Federal Reserve, and it took Reagan to appoint this guy back in the day. And it took Volcker courage to raise the Fed funds rate, at that time, about 8%, 9%, which was really high. And you know, my parents used to tell me during that time, the mortgage they took out and the current home that they live in was at like 16% for a 30-year fixed mortgage. And so what's going to happen is, you know, the Feds right now, they were talking about cutting, you know, rates because they did it, right? Soft landing, Biden did it, Powell did it, we built back better. We got out of the mess that resulted because of COVID. Inflation wasn't because of government, right? It was because of a supply shock.
You're saying this is all what they want us to believe, all those things?
Well, that was the narrative they were portraying, right? It was COVID, it was supply shock. You know, it takes time, but at the end of the day, Biden did it, Powell did it. There's no need to worry. You know, don't vote for this Trump guy. You know, Biden did it. Unfortunately, you know, this has been in the making for numerous decades. And as you all know, you know, the heart of this issue lies in 2008. And unfortunately, they didn't allow for a correction.
Jet, I know you have a lot of things to say about this conversation here. What's on your mind, Jet?
Well, I wish I could bring a more intellectual or higher intellectual topic to the table. But the reason I'm calling in tonight is because there's a panel, the three of you, I believe, are more, I guess, siding with my perspective on how we use terms when referring to, you know, these parasites and other things.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe 15 years ago that I first felt enlightened about the fact that when we use certain terms, they generate certain psychological responses within ourselves and with other people we talk to.
Right.
And I have since then told everyone, please, government, because it doesn't exist. They're only groups and gangs of people willing to do harm against you if you don't.
It broke up a little bit. I just want to clarify for the listeners what you said. You said, please don't use the word government, right?
Yeah, but I've come to model that a little bit over the years. You know, that wall of terms, I think I sent in, like I said, maybe 15 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that I thought I'd probably persuade you guys into is to use the term government, if you will, only as an adjective. So when you're referring to something that is within these gangs and groups, if you want to use the word government, it might be easier for you to lead it as an adjective, you know, government goons,
right?
City, county, state, whatever.
I don't always remember, but I do think it's a very, very good tool for us to explain things to people. It does give them a psychological response in their head. They're like, wow. It immediately
city gang
conveys something. Right, right.
City parasites.
It immediately conveys something to someone, even if they've never thought of these things this way.
Well, yeah, the whole concept, I think Jay brought to the table, you know, more or less the parasite thing. I included that, but to be able to elaborate on that, the fact is they are extracting the blood of the people to be able to support their own nonsense. I mean, there's so much corruption in every level of this thing, these groups and gangs. it's just amazing if anybody looks into it. I mean, money, somebody gets into a certain position. I read recently about how their daughter at age 22 decided to create a nonprofit organization, and the person in charge of this one area just kind of funneled about $3 million into that brand new, you know, nonprofit thing. So he essentially instantly made a millionaire of his daughter. Now, one of the goon things that's kind of interesting happening today is, I don't know if you can heard about that fellow out in Indiana, Officer Schimmel or Shizzle, whatever his name is.
Oh, no. So Indiana, there was a cop name, and what happened with him?
Well, he pulled over this 18-year-old girl, and she cracked her window down about 2 inches. He got real irate about that, and at some point, you know, lost his, I think it was about a minute and a half into it, he lost his thing, opened the door, pulled her out, slammed her face down onto the cement. And this is one of the fastest situations where he was actually fired here this last week or whatever it was.
Wow.
This happened in January, so about 3 months. Initially the city council supported his action as proper and procedural, that kind of nonsense. But anyone could tell by all the cameras, the gas station camera and his car dash cam, that it was just over the top. I mean, she didn't break anything. She didn't get cut up or anything like that. But still, this is what's really fun about YouTube and all that, where we can get the word around and we can eliminate these goons, these crazy people who dress up in uniform and then just go out and constantly abuse everybody else.
David in New Mexico. David, what's on your mind?
Hey, Triple B, how's it going tonight?
Why am I Triple B?
Oh, ball busting Bonnie.
Oh, okay. It's going fine. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, there is a 4B version of that one too, but I'm in a good mood tonight, so I won't go into that.
I almost think I know, but
yeah, it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy, and you guys are exceptionally smart. You know, as your previous caller had said. So,
oh, he said that our listeners are exceptionally smart, and we agreed with that.
Well, don't you listen to your own program?
I guess I listen to those people. Like Jay and Riley talk to me here, so I'm listening to them.
There you go. All right. So. I did happen to note that you spent some time just a moment ago talking about cows, beef cows, and calves, bull calves, heifer calves. Well, you know, quite in detail. You know, we were talking about chicken, Tyson, and Purdue, and all this agricultural livestock stuff.
Yeah, because so there's something going on.
Huh?
Because there's news about it, you know?
Well, there's news about horses, too.
You mean horses?
Yeah, well, of course. So what do you think it said?
Well, I knew you said horse, but I don't think the listeners did.
Oh, okay. Well, they know now. So, you know, you had criticized me. I mean, first of all, I mean, it's kind of a slap in the face, Triple B, when you spend all this time talking about other livestock and then you discriminate against specific livestock. I don't think that's fair, 14th Amendment at all, you know.
Well, technically, in California, horses are not livestock, so because it's illegal in California to slaughter a horse for consumption.
That's dumb.
So what happened is a bunch of these farms in California that were livestock operations, breeding farms, horse farms, racing stables, whatever, pleasure stables, they had all these agricultural exemptions. So when they did the thing where they banned that you couldn't, like, eat a horse, basically, in California, they're no longer livestock. They're now pets. So all this horse industry took a major beating about a decade ago, I guess it was about a decade ago or so, because people had, like, these horse farms that, you know, paid, like, agricultural-type tax rate, which, say, I don't know, let's say it was $5,000 a year for your horse farm because it's agricultural, and now that it's not agricultural, it's... you know, just a pet, a horse, is not livestock. Then it goes to be some kind of commercial tax rate, which turn some of these places into like having like $50,000-$60,000 a year property taxes when they had a few thousand dollar a year property taxes.
Whoa.
Put them right out of business.
That's so terrible.
The real uber wealthy ones didn't go out of business, you know, where all the politicians send their wives and their daughters to go ride their horses, and the owners of prisons and, you know.
Of course not. They've got the politicians like to keep their favorite horse.
Oh, yeah.
People and money.
You know, those are the guys buying $100,000 ponies for their kids and stuff. But yeah, so they aren't livestock there, but maybe in Arizona they stare. And it's just not hip to eat horses. In American culture,
I don't like the idea. It's so funny because in the break, Jay was actually talking about. I showed him a picture of a Shetland pony my dad saw today when he was driving, and I was like, "Look how a Shetland
Shetland pony
Shetland pony." Well,
shouldn't you say Crapland?
No, I'm not saying what you think I'm saying. But he looked chubby to me, is what I was going to say. Whoa, you almost made me accidentally cuss just now. What the heck? But he looked chubby to me, and he was really cute. But Jay was telling me they get even fatter, and that people will eat them. And
so what it is when ponies can live a very long old age.
Hmm.
And what happens with some of these ponies at the auction, like ponies can live to be 30, 40 years old pretty easy to where like a full-size horse, you don't see many of them make it to 30.
Hmm.
And so you'll see like this old pony, and when it goes that has a bunch of like cellulite, it looks like all over it, like it's like real chunky around the top of its butt, around its shoulders, around its ears, its neck is real chunky. And that will do what's called JAP, J-A-P.
I didn't want to have Jeremy holding too long. He's calling from Australia. Jeremy, from Australia, what's on your mind?
Hello, I'm calling in again as the TikTok correspondent.
Thank you for that.
And thank you. By the way, the followers are up to 8,211, still trying to get to 10,000 so we can stream 24/7.
On TikTok, and we're at Free Talk Live on there.
I've never been on TikTok before.
Like a few weeks ago, you were calling, and you know, I'm sure this isn't an uncommon occurrence, but Bonnie, you were calling cops pigs, and then some of the co-hosts said that's not fair to pigs to compare them to cops.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned that you thought cops everywhere were pretty much, you know, that kind of bad person or whatever, like not all cops, but cops everywhere. And someone brought up a point that I thought was pretty, her name's Tupu. She says, don't compare American cops to other cops out there. Whoops. Ah. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Don't compare American cops to other cops out there. Honestly, imagine a world full of American cops. It would be like Gotham City out there. And I thought that was a very good point because stereotypically, American cops are some of the worst. Maybe some other third world countries as well, but
I don't know. I don't really think much about cops outside of the United States, so I'm not saying I didn't, but I just don't remember making a comment. Like, I would want to know what exactly I said to explain myself. But one thing I will say is that
you weren't comparing them to cops in other countries. You just mentioned cops everywhere. Probably not necessarily thinking about the fact. Yeah, that cops might be different in other countries.
Well, one thing I want to say is that during the lockdowns all over the world, that's pretty much proof that they're bad everywhere. Like, there weren't very many countries where they were good. I mean, like, the cops in China locking people down into their apartment complexes, the cops in Australia even not letting
Canada,
people
New Zealand
go from city to city. You know, you're getting a text on your phone or cops will show up if you're not at your house in some places in Australia.
Yeah, it is interesting because Melbourne was supposedly, some people said it was the most locked down city in the world, where I'm kind of like, well, what about the cities in China that were like people are literally locked in the houses? Yeah.
But I hear that a lot.
Where I live in Australia, I didn't see any of that, and people were ignoring it a lot and stuff like that.
Were you rural, more rural?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, but I'm near the sixth largest city in Australia, but about an hour out of it. So,
and see, that's kind of like what a pattern that happens everywhere is like the like when I kept hearing people say, oh, Texas isn't even locked down. It's totally free in Texas. And I would be like, what are they talking about? Because I lived in the city of San Antonio, like in right in the middle of it in 2020. And it was like a police state. It was, you'd have to walk past police officers to go into Walmart and they'd be like, oh, you got to wear your mask, got it pulled up over your mouth and your nose. And, you know, it was really locked down. Everybody was obeying. But then people were talking about the rural areas in Texas saying like, oh, nobody cares about it here. So it just seems like.
And I guess, well, sorry, rural areas don't really have cops. There's like state troopers on the highway or whatever. But
yeah, some don't.
Rural areas are better places because they don't have cops.
Yeah.
Well, there's just a huge culture divide between, you know, urban, you know, city urban liberal types versus, you know, rural conservative Americans. And it doesn't matter if you're in New Hampshire, Florida, Texas, or New York, you know, these places are, you know, very different places. But, you know, like Concord and Manchester, New Hampshire are very, very blue cities. You know, the cops are, you know, all, you know, very much have the woke mind virus. They're all about, you know, the whole, you know, wokeism thing. And
they're all about big government. They want the government to take care of everybody.
And they're all about cracking down on and you know, going against anybody who is like of a who isn't of the woke narrative, who isn't of, you know, the leftists, you know whatever, you know, they're pushing. And so, but this is pretty much all the cities everywhere. And, you know, even like Colorado is becoming just as bad as California and New York.
We were going to talk about this from nhjournal.com. This article says, harassed for declining to fly LGBTQ flag. Goffstown barber gets no trespass order for activists. And this is a article Jay brought in, and it's pretty honestly kind of entertaining in a way. There's this activist going around apparently harassing business owners if they won't put up the rainbow LGBTQ flag that also has that little rectangle in it, I'm sure, not just the regular nice-looking rainbow one, but the one that, like, represents Marxism.
And there's, like, a whole, like, there's a triangle in there to represent, like, child pedophilia. I listened to a whole thing the other day, just, you know, as I was working, it, you know, popped up, but it was a guy was explaining, you know, all the symbology within the LGBTQ flag with the little triangle thing in it. He went into it and like the idea is that it's like the colors is like that blue color represents like baby blue. Really sick stuff. But yeah, this place is called Alpha's Barber Shop and the owner is Chris Pruner of Goffstown, New Hampshire. And this, you know, I'm in a local Signal chat and this pops up the other day. And this is, I've been hearing about this woman. Her name is in the article. I forget what her name is.
They did or didn't put the name in the.
Her name is in the article if you read down a little bit.
It says, I don't see it yet. So it'll be in here, but, I'm seeing the name of the barbershop, but we'll read it and I'll pull it up. It's just, it's not jumping out at me.
Annie Boyer, I believe is her name.
Oh, is this it? Chair Kelly Ann Boyer.
Yep.
Okay.
And well, she's part of this group. I don't know if it's the exact woman, but they're going around and, you know, and harassing people. But what was interesting is as soon as a whole bunch of people in this Signal group, they're like, oh, I'm going to go get my hair cut. Usually I have my wife cut my hair. Or one woman's like, oh, I'm bringing all my kids to get their hair cut. And I usually cut their hair. So it looks like locally there's a lot of support for this guy. I'm thinking about going to get my beard trimmed there in a couple of days. I need to do that. And usually I just do it myself. But, you know, this is great that this guy's, you know, standing up against this, you know, mental illness called wokeism.
I think it's also just a story about, you know, private property and the idea that somebody can just come and harass you on your property to promote the ideas that she cares about that you don't care about is ridiculous. So, I also do think that it's important to support small businesses in your town if you know that the woke mob is going to go after them because that's kind of a real thing. So, let's get into the story. It says, you're part of the problem. That's what an LGBTQ activist told Alpha's barbershop owner, Chris Prunier of Goffstown. Maybe it's like Prunier or something, but this is America, so no, I'm just kidding. Prunier, that's probably how I'm going to have to say it. So, of Goffstown, New Hampshire. And this activist stomped out of his business angry that he declined to fly a gay pride flag at his business.
Well, it is his right to fly whatever flag he wants. And if he doesn't want to fly a gay pride flag, it's his right. It's his business. It's his property.
I'm honestly surprised that they're calling this flag the gay pride flag anyway, because that is not the gay pride flag anymore. The LGBTQIA2-S pride flag. That is not just like the regular gay pride flag, like the regular rainbow that... So much nicer looking, and it didn't have all this agenda attached.
Definitely all the gay people I know, personally know, are not of this woke garbage, whole...
I'm sure a lot of them aren't, because they feel like their movement has been hijacked by a bunch of crazy people.
It's been hijacked by a bunch of pedophiles. That's like really, you know, when they start... Arya was really upset about this, you know, trying to include, you know... MAPS, minor attracted people, as being a protected class under this, you know, same like, you know, acronym, whatever.
Yeah, I also know that.
Add them to it.
I've also heard Arya mention on Free Talk Live that she's not a fan of the Gay Pride Month or whatever, because was there being proud about homosexuality or whatever? It's like
just like what's there to be proud about the way you were born?
Yeah,
like I'm not proud to be white anymore than I'm, you know, like. Just, you know, just like, oh, that's a thing. Like,
and
it's fine.
For listeners who don't know, Arya's a trans woman, so I think she has a little more credibility than I do.
Right, so it's just like, I'm not proud to be a straight, white woman. It's just things that I am. Like, yeah. So I do think Pride Month is fun, and there's lots of fun things that happen from it. So it's not like I, like, hate it, but I can understand being, like, somebody that falls under that category and then being annoyed with the way that it gets talked about every year. I like how just like things come, like celebrations pop out of it. It's like celebrating things is always better than, you know, just like people out there complaining, you know, like people at this point, they're just kind of celebrating what has been done for the most part. At every gay pride parade I've been to, it's mostly like celebrating the fact that, like, there is more, you know, not because of the government, but I think because of the way that society has changed its viewpoints, like, there's just more, you know, freedom to be had for gay people than there was in, like, the 80s when you just get beat up for being gay or whatever.
Sure.
And my dad talks about that, so I'm like, you know, I don't think it's just, like, 0% true. And my great aunt is a lesbian, and she's, like, 80-something. And even in California, she talks about how it used to be not okay when she was like a very young person and she was lesbian.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.